Hey folks, Chris Stamey was on the show twice recently, and so I've put both of those interviews in this podcast for this week. So if you're a faithful listener and you already heard the second one, just skip it. But listen to the first part because that's new, and you'll hear Chris Stamey performing live in the studio. Don't forget, our WFMU fundraising marathon is just a couple weeks away, and podcast listeners, I would love to hear from some of you. If you do make a pledge to this program, mention in the comments that you are a podcast listener. I'd love to hear the podcast folks representing. So I would appreciate that. Check out WFMU.org/Michael for the list of upcoming guests and the archives. And here is a double dose of Chris Stamey. That is from the new Chris Stamey record called Lovesick Blues. And Chris is playing tonight at Joe's Pub, and it is sort of a special gig. Chris is here with us. Good morning, Chris. I appreciate you coming all the way to Brooklyn on the day of a gig.
It's great to be here. And I mean, I'm halfway from here. I lived in Hoboken for a long time.
Yeah, you were one of the first people to invade Hoboken many waves ago. New record's called Lovesick Blues. The show at Joe's Pub tonight, you were just sort of discussing with me what the band will be. It's not just guitar, bass, drums, and, count off 1, 2, 3, 4. It's a string section and piano and harmony singing. And
yeah, I mean, not only is it not just bass and drums, there are none. I've written this record in a little bit of a different way. I went in and played acoustic guitar and sang and with the producer, and we had things we liked, and then I orchestrated it either with kind of large ensemble orchestral tones or with string quartets. And I've since done these live arrangements. And so I've Jane Scarpantoni, who's a great cellist and an old friend, is playing with me tonight, along with Conrad Harris and Adriana Marcano. So we have a string trio playing all scored arrangements. And then Charles Cleaver, a great former North Carolinian, now New Yorkian, is playing piano, and Lydia Kavanaugh, I'm a big fan of hers, she's singing harmonies with me. But sometimes it sounds a little Baroque, sometimes it sounds a little bit out there, but if it goes awry, it's really my fault, because I'm doing all the scoring.
Yeah, I read in your bio that you were, I guess, you played cello in high school, I guess. Were you the kid who was forced to take cello lessons, and now that's paying off in a terrific way, or is that always?
Well, I really played upright bass in blues bands and in the school orchestra. But when I went to, I was a music composition major in college, and you had to play an instrument, so I moved over to cello. I can't really claim to doing more than insult a tradition, as composition majors at that time were involved in what I call pouring pizza into pianos. It was still like the end of the avant-garde era, and we weren't that interested in the great Baroque literature for the cello.
But still, you took away from that the ability to arrange these strings.
Somewhat. I took away from it the ability to pour pizza into pianos. I think it was the end of serialism, and I think it's actually only in the last few years that I've come back to actual contrapuntal writing. I got some of the original scores for the Big Star Third record and was able to kind of learn what Carl Marsh did there, and became enamored of some other arrangers, Richard Hewson, who did some of the, like Those Were the Days for Mary Hopkins. And I've just gotten really interested in how that works.
There's a quote about your new record, Lovesick Blues. This record is the closest I've ever gotten to the sound I hear in my head in the middle of the night. I think it's a great quote, and it sort of got me thinking about your records. And I was telling you earlier, the first two DB's records were really influential to my high school music-making self and my 20s music-making self, and then your series of solo albums likewise. As you sort of branched out and explored, it sort of opened my thing up. And I was kind of thinking of what is the exact thing that I was reacting to. And I don't, if you agree or don't agree, please tell me. But I think it, what I love so much about the Chris Stamey body of work is that it is, without a doubt, pop music, but it is stretching the limits of that to the extremes, and that makes it super interesting to me.
How can I respond to that? I grew up without, I played with Peter Holzapfel a lot, and that's a guy who walked into a huge body of talent. His brother was had a master's in classical organ from Yale, and Peter was kind of born with that in his head, and I wasn't. I struggled for a long time studying music theory, and mainly because I was really fascinated with it all. And it was at a time when the idea was, how can you take it further? I mean, with the Beatle records, you would see, okay, they would learn a diminished chord, and then they would write a song with that in it, and then they would learn Picardian third ending, and you know, continually try to take music further. And that was the way we grew up. Okay, we've done this, where can we go? And I feel like that's still kind of a responsibility of an artist. But the other side of it is, maybe you, in a way, I feel like I've always done the same thing from the time I started banging on a piano at age of 5. You know, you have a childlike curiosity of, what about this? And you just kind of move through it.
But everybody's is different, and that's what makes it, you know, so interesting. You know, it's so clearly you behind every move, everything going on there. Can you play us, you've got your guitar with you, and you're warmed up. Can you play us something, maybe from the new record, or?
Well, you know, I was thinking, I was listening to you talking to Lulu, and I think I was saying there was a time when the DBs were in London and working at Emmerich Studio, and every morning Paul McCartney and Linda McCartney would come in with Lulu and come to the door and wave, "Hello, DBs," you know, and "How's it going?" And we were like grumpy and probably hungover and didn't really pay him much mind. But since that time, I really respect Paul McCartney and his writing. And there's a song on the DBs record that I tried to use some of those harmonic progressions, some of the things I learned from him. And since we're talking about that, maybe I can
Share
that one.
All right, here's Chris Stamey, folks.
And we're going to actually play this one tonight because it's, it does have a string trio on it. Far away and long ago, I knew. Far away and long ago, the dreams we planned. Far away and long ago, slipped through our hands. Far away and long ago, if I pass you on the street and dance, ask you why, you slowly turn your head with no reply. Far away and long ago seems so denied. Days are empty and inverted. Now the nights are long. How can I like yesterday. Far away and long ago, I knew you when. Far away and long ago, the dreams we planned. Now I try to find a way to understand. Far away and long ago, far away and long ago, far away and long ago.
The sound of two hands clapping. Wow, that's terrific. Wow, one of the things that I've always loved about the DBs, and I think that people react to consciously or unconsciously, the way you and Peter sing is you both sing all the way, you know, you both sing out, and not everyone does that. I mean, especially as music goes through changes, some people are staring at their shoes, or you know, some people can't be bothered. It's uncool to actually sing, you know, and you guys never do that, and I find that works so 100%. You know, is it conscious?
I'm glad to hear that. I actually think I sing to my shoes quite a bit, and in fact, they sing back. But it's something about playing all acoustically with the strings. I think I do access my inner Harry Connick more than I have at times. I mean, thank you.
You're welcome. Tonight at Joe's Pub, Chris Stamey will be playing selections from Lovesick Blues, his new album, and folks can check out chrisstamey.com. How many times have you been on WFMU?
Guess. Not enough.
Five, six, seven?
No, I don't think so. Yola Tango has played my songs on FMU a remarkable number of times in their fundraiser, but I'm not sure. Peter and I have been in this room before, and then I've come over a few times.
All right. Can you play us a song from the new album? What do you got up your sleeve?
Well, like all of us, I think I was touched and a little sad to read about the death of Shadow Morton, who produced those great Vanilla Fudge records, and some people may not know he actually did the Shangri-Las earlier on, and I was reading about that, and I guess a lot of the songs on my record, I went through a songwriting kind of period where I would go in every day and work and try, you know, be very meticulous about it, but I was reading about him writing Leader of the Pack on the way to the recording studio in 22 minutes, and how did he do 22 minutes, you know? I mean, there's a song on my record that the record was done and I was doing a rehearsal with a group down there. So I wrote this song in 20 minutes, just totally off the cuff. And it became a little bit of a single on the record. It's written from the point of view of two kids lying in the park trying to look through to the galaxies. It's called Astronomy. Go past, emptying the hourglass of time. High above the atmosphere, watch the satellites draw near. Then they ricochet and veer away. To me, and then gravity will pull you in until there's no escape from where we lie. Quark and Charmer are two friends with
no beginning and no end. We orbit over verdant sea and sky. And I don't know why. Astronomy, scattered and strange. In our astronomy, far out of to me, and then gravity will pull you in until there's no escape from where we
chord. It's a very Chris Stamey chord, you know. That is a very
I think of it as a Mitch Easter chord, actually. I thought, well, that's a Let's Active thing to do.
That's very interesting.
I guess I get us mixed up, you know.
It's a sort of a family. When you make a string arrangement, you write it on a piece of paper, and then you have to imagine it, how it will sound. Is it a surprise when they finally start playing it and you get to hear what it sounds like?
It depends. Sometimes I put it into software, which actually will let you hear
it
in advance. And I try not to start with the software, but that's a way to double check it, you know. You hear like this kind of tinny version of a cello.
But
do we have an example? Did I make a...
Yes. We've got a few tracks that you kind
you
of have...
Play yeah. a little bit.
Which track should we hear?
Like number six is actually Astronomy. It's a song I just played. And I think I made you a mix that has some of the stuff on it.
This is closer to what the show will be tonight. This, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, let's hear a bit of this. Okay, I mean, that kind of gives you an idea.
It sounds great. I do hear a little bit of the pizza in the piano. You know?
Well, we used to call that Dickinsonian, when you use your elbow in just the right Jim Dickinson way.
Oh, was he a leader in the elbow piano technique?
I think Henry Cowell was actually the guy who Cowell was a champion of Ives, but also. Invented notation that involved playing the piano with boards and either the black keys or the white. With big boards, you got to choose either the black keys or the white keys. But he had a number of collage pieces.
I do want to point out, not only tonight at Joe's Pub, but tomorrow in the World Live Cafe in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I know we've got listeners listening down in Philadelphia. We don't have much time. Tell me about moving to New York City and playing bass with Alex Chilton. You know, you see pictures of New York City in 1976 or whatever, 77. It's like a different world completely. What was it like?
I think New York is always a different world. I mean, it's like the you know, there's always the coast, but the actual coastline changes year to year. It was a tiny scene, the CBGB scene. You know, 100 people. I mean, it seemed just like the local. It was like Cheers, except there was a dog relieving itself on the floor and a bowl of chili that no one had ever eaten and had never been changed.
Charming. Interesting. We, you know, last time you were on, we were on by telephone a few weeks ago, a few months ago, and I was asking you about Alex. You know, he'd passed away, and you were playing these big star tribute shows, and he was a guy of such huge influence to folks. Yeah, I met him a couple times, and he was always, he's a very unusual guy, maybe to strangers more so than to close friends. But you reiterated, well, Alex was your friend. You talked about music or whatever, and he was just a normal guy. And to me, that seemed impossible almost, you know, because he was such an odd guy.
Well, I think there is a little bit of the blind man and the elephant with Alex. Everybody seems to have a different opinion. I only knew him for that one brief time, and then I would see him off and on when he'd come through town. But the time we played together, for some reason he decided he wanted to show me things, and he would show me things on the guitar. He would teach me techniques for trying to pick up women on trains. You know, there was a whole variety of mentorship that... But, I mean, he produced a couple of my records, and he had taken techniques from the Memphis recording and kind of blown them up, whereas if you normally push a compressor into the edge, he would wrap it around the console to where it was just explosive. I mean, where he later went and did the Cramps records, where it really did blow up. Yeah, I mean, I've been really lucky to be around a couple of amazing people in my life, and he was definitely one of them. I did not do those Big Star Third concerts as a way to pay homage to Alex. We were already planning to do those before he died. Oh. And so it has been kind of strange. I wish he could have seen him. He might have hated him.
He might have. Will you play us another song, perhaps something, another thing from Lovesick Blues, your new album?
I was thinking about... I could play Skin, or you wanted to hear I Wrote This Song. I'll play I Wrote This Song for you. How about that?
That's
the one you requested.
Chris Stamey, folks.
That's pretty well in tune. And I live across from the James Taylor Bridge in Chapel Hill, and that was somewhat of the inspiration for this. Like, what's it really like to be a troubadour?
I've sung this song so many times, the familiar chords and shotgun rhymes, until my voice is hoarse and I'm bewildered and bemused. I know the words by rote before they even leave my throat. I'm thinking where I'll be tomorrow and on what lost avenue. Nothing ever changes in this pantomime, but I thought I'd tell you one more time. I wrote this song for you. I wrote this song for you. Capo travels up and down until it finds the perfect sound. Then I grab a pencil, hold in the lobe will do. By that time my thoughts have turned to everything that can't belong to a wandering troubadour, a sailor on the sea. Nothing ever changes for the castaway. All I really wanted was was to say. I wrote this song for you. Trucks roll by the window, full of apricots and kitchen tables. Where are you now? They whisper. I'll sing this song again tonight, and silhouette, the words take flight and find their way across the room and out the backstage door. And I'll remain their messenger who stays behind in case there's something left to say, or better yet, left to leave unsaid. But one day soon I'll wake up in your arms as starlings serenade us from the yard. You grind the coffee and the kettle sings. You hum a little tune and the alarm clock rings. And I remember every little thing that I wrote for you. That I wrote for you. I wrote this song for you. I wrote this song for you.
Chris Stamey. Thank you, Chris. It sounds lovely.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Folks, tonight, Chris Stamey will be at Joe's Pub. So if you're not going to see Lulu, go see Chris tonight. The new record is called Lovesick Blues. Chris's website is chrisstamey.com. Chris, quickly, is there a new record coming? Is there a new project, you and Peter, you and the DBs, yourself? What's next?
Well, I'm trying to make a record with what we call the Fellow Travelers, which is a bunch of folks from North Carolina. It's about 15 of us, including strings and brass. And so we're doing some stuff. And I'm working on a new record of mine. So that's really where my head's at right now.
You are at a very fertile period right now. Thank you, Chris.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated? Good night.
Folks, it's WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. That is the DBs from Repercussions, one of my favorite records ever. And I was just discussing with somebody who are the greatest bands ever produced from the United States of America. And I would guess my top three are NRBQ, the Beach Boys, and the DBs, in no particular order. The DBs, of course, are playing tonight at Maxwell's. They're back. They've got a brand new album called Falling Off the Sky. And a happy surprise, I've got Chris Stamey on the telephone. Chris, welcome to the program. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. Glad to be on FMU.
You've adjusted to Northern time?
Yeah, there really isn't a big time gap between North Carolina and New York.
You got jet lag.
But I'm hanging in there.
You know, everybody's really been enjoying the new record. It was kind of a long wait. We had Peter on the program a couple times, kind of, you know, discussing the process and stuff. And we've talked about the history of the band. And it's just something, it's not like the Eagles, you know, hell freezing over. But I guess you guys were always friends and always in and out of each other's lives and projects. But this is definitely a DB's record right here, I think.
Yeah, we did want to make a record that seemed like... it had a connection to the other records we'd made. I think we all do different kinds of music all the time, but we wanted to take a little bit of time and try to find our voice again. These reunion things are happening left and right, and sometimes they don't quite click, but they come out anyway. We recorded a lot of songs and were able to pick the ones that really did seem to fit together.
Oh, how many songs are extra did you have left over, sort of?
I think we finished about 25 songs in all. So what is that, about 13 left over?
Yeah, that's amazing.
And there are a bunch of other things we started and maybe never went back to or took a couple of different passes at.
Do you go back to those first two DB's albums as I do periodically and just marvel at them? Just they're sort of this amazing, they're sort of timeless and they're also right exactly in the time they were made. I love those records.
Well, I'm glad you do. Let's see, to be as honest as I can within the confines of radio, I do listen to them, but mainly I listen to Peter's songs. I have some hesitation about my contributions at the time. I think Peter was writing, that was a great period for him, and I really wanted to try to do all I could to match his game on this record.
Very interesting. You know,
when I hear it, like when you're playing in Spain, I don't really think of the way it sounds. I see all these images of where we were when we were recording it, or I think, oh yeah, I remember that television song that made me want to have that little flat five guitar line. You know, so I probably can't hear them, literally can't process them in my brain like you do.
You're too close to it. Yeah, it's funny because I always think that the yin and yang between you and Peter in those songs is kind of what makes those records very interesting. You know, and once you left the band and Peter wrote all the songs, it was, you know, it was a completely different entity. I saw you guys a couple months ago. You were here at La Passion Rouge, and it was a great show. It was a perfect the new songs and the old songs blended together really well. The band seemed to be very relaxed and having fun. Well, except for Gene, who never looks like he's having fun. But the rest of you guys all...
Oh, he was having a great time. That little wrinkle at the corner of his eye.
I'm joking, of course. It just seemed like, you know, you guys were real happy to be doing it, and the songs are still great, and the thing holds up. And, you know, it's is it fun? I mean, I guess that's the question.
It is a good question, although I didn't catch it as a question. Peter and I love to come up with these tailored outfits or casual clothes that fit on the body of the band. And to us, the body of the band is the way Will and Gene play together. And they don't play that way separately, really. But they have this exploding atomic thing they do. That it does remind me a little bit of NRBQ at times, a band we always loved, and we certainly love the Beach Boys too. So it was nice for you to bring those guys up. But it's fun to be on stage with our rhythm section.
And do surprise.
Never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I was going to say, do surprises still happen? You're right, because Gene and Will both play their own instrument in a sort of semi unorthodox way, and then together it really is a force to be reckoned with. Yeah.
It's fun. And also, we're proud to be all from North Carolina, and we worked on this record in North Carolina, but we started playing together up in New York in the CBGB scene, I guess when, like, DNA and with Arto, and a lot of... it was a wild time in New York, and we were writing our more controlled, more traditionally harmonic songs, but living in that time means that somewhere in the nucleus of the band there is a sort of freedom to try different things.
I think Peter said to me that although Alan Betrock is the producer of the first DB's record, he said that you really produced it. Would you sort of humbly agree that that's sort of true?
Well, I mean, Rick Rubin produces a lot of records, but it's kind of by osmosis, I think. Or I remember when Alex Chilton was producing Mitch Easter and Peter Hall's Apple, and he did so by sleeping under the console for a lot of the time. It did come out different if he hadn't been there, but Alan would say the right thing at the right time. We were putting a whole lot of trashy effects on the song Dynamite, and he said, no, don't do that, you know. And then that's at the heart of production. So I give him credit, but we did carry the load in terms of the detail, and you know, I loved Alan. You know, he was a great visionary guy.
Yeah, well, his name is certainly on enough great records that you figure he brought something to the party because he was involved in so many great projects.
Someone reminded me the other day about him cutting the first version of Heart of Glass, and that I had mixed it and the Blondie song. I'd forgotten that entirely, but yeah, he did.
In the, you know, whatever, 1975, 6, 7, somewhere in that time, you came to New York City, and New York was kind of totally, you know, going crazy. And Alex Chilton was here, and I think you were playing bass for these kind of, you know, weird Alex gigs at places like CB&GB's and stuff like that. What was that whole thing like? I mean, you were a young guy, and here was Alex, a kind of a eccentric guy. Just how did that all feel?
Well, I didn't see him as eccentric. I saw him as an American musician, really dedicated. You know, it was a time when everybody was really poor. I think that maybe wore on him while it was a time when you could go down to CBGB's and someone, you know, would buy you drink after drink, but they wouldn't buy you food. my experience with Alex was universally great. I learned a lot, you know. We'd travel together, we recorded together, and a lot of the gigs maybe were just the tip of the iceberg for me.
But he was a friend.
I love playing for him, and also I don't think that those gigs were so weird.
He was a friend of yours in the traditional
sense?
No.
I knew Terry Ork a little bit when I moved up here, and Terry put out a record called Singer Not the Song on Alex. Alex was going to come up for one weekend or something to play one show.
But Chris, I mean, through this experience, you became his actual friend?
Yeah, well, yes. And that's what people in bands do. We had a little band in New York.
Yeah.
I mean, Alex is great. You know, he's just not, he wasn't that taken with the idea of being a rock star. He had great curiosity about the world and, you know,
yeah,
I'm talking too much.
No, not at all. You're talking just right. The new record is called Falling Off the Sky. Chris Stamey is my guest, and the DB's one of the greatest American bands ever. And luckily, I think all of their, most of their records are fairly easy to get your hands on these days, which is a sort of a changing that fluxes from time to time. But tonight you can go see them live at Maxwell's in Hoboken, New Jersey, and I recommend it. They'll be playing, I'm sure, some songs from this new record and some songs from the older records, and some of them are slightly rearranged and changed a bit, and it's just great to see you guys singing. One thing about you and Peter, you both sing all the way, you know what I mean? You both open your mouths and sing, and that's always a pleasure to see. I asked Chris what song he wanted to hear, and he said The Adventures of Albatross and Doggerel. Why this one?
Well, I like that FMU will go anywhere and do anything, and Albatross maybe isn't going to find a lot of love on Top 40 radio in America, but it finds a lot of love with us. So it's one we're playing tonight. I thought it would, maybe you can follow it with Art Ensemble of Chicago or something.
Well, yeah, we've got Stevie Jackson from Bell and Sebastian coming into the studio just in a couple of minutes. So we're going to follow Chris Stamey up with Stevie. But folks who want more, we'll do this. Let's do this again next time you put out a record, Chris, because I've got a few more questions for you. But we can follow up with this tonight, everybody. We'll see you down at Maxwell's. Any final thoughts, Chris?
The Spinto Band is joining us there, and we're excited about that. They're a great young band, and we think it'll be a great night.
All right, a great double bill.
Everyone who didn't head for the hills on Labor Day should head for the hills at Maxwell's.
Right, people not at in the Hamptons, we can all, you know, drown our sorrows. And the food's good at Maxwell's. It's a fun place to hang out. So the DB's tonight at Maxwell's. Chris Stamey, thanks so much.